are now tuned in to the British Millennials.
Yo, Shannon.
Yo, Rob.
Shannon, do you know what this month is?
Well, this month is March. This month is shared by Pisces and Aries. I don't know. What is that month,
isn't it? This is Women's History Month. So I want to know from you, who, if anyone, has been like a childhood woman role model to you?
Women's History Month, you know, it feels so good to be a woman. And as I was kind of going through influential women in my life, I didn't really necessarily think of women who influenced me during my childhood, because that would be my mom. And I was like, are you going to really do a letter to your mom on this episode?
Okay. Well, we will be we're going to get into some influential women in history and even present day.
Shout out to mom. Shout out to mom and shout out to all of my teachers, because any teacher that I had was influential in my journey, in my growth. So we're going to just start it off by shouting out.
Big shout out to those people.
Yes. Shout out to those women who every day are influencing lives, children's lives,
right,
artists' lives.
Right.
We're just going to just give a blanket shout out to those women, mothers, all the mothers in the house. Yeah, like, man.
You know, seriously. They say the future is female.
It absolutely is. All the mamas, all the mothers, all the mamas, all the mamas, all the big mas.
The mums, all the mums.
All the mums.
All the mums. Shout out to y'all.
All the mums. Shout out to them. But okay, I'm going to start off this list of influential women with somebody who I have been such a fan of. And I know that a lot of people.
Oh, wait, hold on. By the way, y'all, we're about to. So for this special episode, we're going to be doing a list of influential women. Shannon has a list of her peeps. I got a list of my peeps. And I'm really excited to hear, because sometimes we be on different pages, but when we're not, we're on the exact same page, right?
But you know, even if we are on different pages, I think that just speaks to the
The diversity.
Just the diversity and the range of womanhood. Because I feel like with womanhood, a lot of times people try to put women in a box and say that womanhood and femininity are one thing. So we're going to get into that today, because it's not just one thing. And even though our lists are going to be different, they won't be at odds. You feel me?
Yeah.
Do you feel me?
Yeah, yeah. All right, so kick us off. Who's the first on your list?
Okay, so the first person on my list, okay, she is an air sign. She's an Aquarius. She was born in your year, 1988.
Big 88. What's
let's
good?
Let's give it.
What's good?
One. Let's give it up one time for the only female billionaire recording artist of all time, Rihanna. Rihanna Fenty. Okay, Robin Rihanna Fenty. Robin Rihanna Fenty.
That's so wild. Let's get into Robin, because I was going to put Riri on there too. I swear to you.
But you knew I was going to put, yes, but you knew I was going to put Riri on there. You already knew. And I knew you was going to put, I feel like you're going to put B on there too, but we're going to wait. We're going to wait, because I know you and you know me. Okay. But let's get into Robin Rihanna Fenty, because Robin Rihanna Fenty is from a small island called Barbados. And this woman has reached across the entire world in so many different ways. Just to talk about her artistry, over 250 million records sold worldwide. She is the second best-selling female artist of all time. Okay.
Really?
Madonna is the first. Just so we're clear. She is the second best-selling female artist of all time. And the highest, listen, but I knew, the highest certified female artist of all time on the RIAA's top artists, which means all digital singles. So she's the highest certified female artist in digital singles, in that ranking as well.
Wow.
She's achieved 14 number one singles, 32 top 10 singles in the US, and 31 top 10 entries in the UK. Her accolades include and shout out for Wiki for this, include 9 Grammy Awards, 9 Grammy Awards, 13 American Music Awards, including the Icon Award. Let's get into it. 12 Billboard Music Awards, 6 Guinness World Record Awards, not awards, but 6, she's broken 6 Guinness World Records, and the NAACP's President Award, and she has an Academy Award nomination. Okay, Time named her one of the most 100 most influential people in the world in not only 2012 but 2018 as well. Okay, and Forbes ranked her among the top 10 highest paid celebrities in 2012 and 2014, and as of 2024, this year, baby, this year, she is the wealthiest female musician with an estimated net worth of $1.4 billion. And that's not it. Aside from music, Miss Fenty is recognized for her humanitarian involvement, her entrepreneurship, and her fashion industry influence, okay? She's established the Clara Lionel Foundation, which she does a lot of her humanitarian work, which she's been honored for that as well. Her cosmetic brand, we all know Fenty Beauty. I'm literally wearing Fenty Beauty at this moment as we speak. I am literally wearing a Fenty bra from her Savage Fenty line, and she started a fashion house under Fenty, okay? She's the first Black woman to lead a luxury brand for the fashion house LVMH, okay? She's also an actress. She's acted in major roles. We know her from Battleship. We also know her from Ocean's 8, right, okay, and Home. Right. And she was appointed the ambassador of Barbados in 2018, and she was declared a national hero of Barbados in 2021. Please 3 cheers for Robin Rihanna Fenty, because she's literally still breaking records. She's now a mother, and I just look up to her so much fashion wise. She's always been so real, just getting into anything she's ever said in her interviews. She's transparent. She is a boss. And I just have always, always admired her. And that's just me gushing for Robin Rihanna Fenty. So one time that's for our Aquarius sister.
Okay, yes. Okay. To kick off my list, I have another Time Magazine designated 100 of the most influential women in the world. This person was actually listed as the top 100 most influential people in the world twice in 2018 and then again in 2022. Forbes put her on the top 30 under 30 in terms of the entertainment section. This is Issa Rae.
Ooh, now, yes.
Issa. Oh my God.
Miss Issa.
I feel like every man wants a woman like Issa. Like, get you a Issa. You can't, because it's only one of them. Of course they do. But Issa has broken so many barriers in the field of entertainment when it comes to screenwriting and producing. She was recognized with a Peabody Trailblazer Award, a Producers Guild of America Visionary Award. She's just been eating it up, like, left and right. And I'm just incredibly proud of her. A lot of people know her from Insecure, but almost all of her productions and projects that she's done had, like, a social narrative and a very important conversation. It's fair to say that Issa kind of set off, or at least put an additional battery in the culture movement and the For the Culture movement. She's just so freaking iconic. But what a lot of people don't know is that she's actually a very big activist for police brutality. And I found out that right after the Alton Sterling, I believe it was Alton Sterling.
Yeah, I think that's right.
After that shooting, she actually raised like almost $1 million for the family to pay for the children to go to college. Wow. Yeah, $700,000. Wow. She raised that money and put it directly in that trust so that the children can go to college. So I got a soft spot for philanthropists, and Issa is definitely that. I just love the image that she portrays and the lack of modesty that she carries with herself. Like, she is not shy to say, yeah, I'm the shit. I did all of that shit, you know? So I respect that, and I know that there are so many young women that are young women and young men that are inspired by the things that she's done. So I'm looking forward to see what she's got under her sleeve next. But yeah, man, shout out to Issa Rae.
Shout out to Issa. And what you said was so important. It's the way that she cheers for herself makes it okay for other Black women to cheer for ourselves, because we are told, talented Black women are told to be humble. And if they aren't humble, they're automatically divas. It's always an issue. And I think that even with some of her viral statements, like it's me season and stuff like that, like she is the affirmation queen. And I thank her for that. I thank her for those affirmations because they're needed. They're needed. And words have power. So thank you, Issa.
You know, as you mentioned, and I'm realizing that she actually, through Insecure, she actually branded herself as the affirmation queen, because her character did those affirmations in the mirrors pretty much every episode. So shout out to my girl Ys.
And normalizing it by using rapping and using something that we hear every day and something that we're really comfortable with to help us deal with something that is uncomfortable. Showering ourselves with affection and giving ourselves compliments and affirming ourselves. And that's just one of the key things that I learned, especially during the pandemic, that's important for us to grow as artists, to also recognize where we've been and give ourselves like a pat on the back. So absolutely, Issa Rae, and we pat you on the back. Sis, we pat you on the back. We see what you're doing. And I mean, she was in an Oscar winning movie this year. If you haven't seen American Fiction, please, please go see American Fiction. We talked a little bit about two of the actors, Sterling K. Brown and our other gentleman who's in the movie. So make sure you go see American Fiction because it is absolutely amazing. Great movie. So let's move. Let's just slide on to the left, and we're going to get into another woman. And I feel like it's just crazy because it's like, I'm not trying to be cliche with these picks, but these women have really not only changed my life, but changed how I see myself. And we're going to go with Michelle LaVon Robinson Obama. Okay, let's get into Michelle. All right, because without Michelle, there would be no Barack, and I promise you that. And I promise you that. Now, if you didn't know, Michelle started as Barack's boss. Let's get into it, okay? So she's always been number one. She's always been in charge, but she's an American attorney and an author, okay? If you didn't know, if you've been under a rock, she served as the First Lady of the United States from 2009 to 2017, and she was married, she is still married, to the former President Barack Obama. She was raised in the South Side of Chicago, which we all know, She's a graduate of, she's a graduate of Princeton University and Harvard Law School. I mean, like, we're not trying to gauge excellence by color, but those schools are prestigious. They're known to have very prestigious people, and those people have known to start amazing businesses, to have amazing trajectories, and have a really big influence. So she already started just as the best, okay? In her early legal career, she worked at a law firm where she met Barack, and she subsequently worked in nonprofits. She worked at the University of Chicago. She later served as the vice president for community and external affairs at the University of Chicago Medical Center, okay? She married Barack in 1992, and as we know, they have two beautiful daughters. But during his presidency and before his presidency, she even made a speech during his campaign trail that really, really set him on a trajectory to win and for success. And she's always kind of been that stable figure that America can trust, right? Because it's hard for us to trust who wants to be somebody who wants to be the president of the United States, right? Because we feel like they want power. She's always been the grounded force behind Barack, and not only behind him, but in front of him, beside him, you know, in all different avenues and in all different corners. And she not only has become a best-selling author herself, but she literally has a Grammy. Okay, she got a Grammy for the audiobook Becoming. And she also, for the best audiobook narration and storytelling in 2020, she also received a Children and Family Emmy Award for her short program on her preschool series. She's also gotten an Emmy for The Light We Carry, which is a documentary about her new book. So let's get into it. She's literally almost to EGOT status. And mama don't even sing. Mama don't even act. Like, she's just such a talented person and such just, for me, the epitome of the Black woman and everything we stand for. She has never been silent. She's always spoken up and she's always been honest. Honesty and integrity to me are just two of the most admirable traits. So here for Michelle Obama. She is the one, not the two.
Period.
Period.
It's real hard to follow Michelle.
You said, why'd you come out? Michelle. Why'd I come out so hard? We came out swinging so hard.
Michelle, like what?
That's what I'm saying. You said everybody wants an Issa Rae. Everybody wants a Michelle, too. Mm-hmm.
I was actually going to put Michelle on the list, too. So now I'm really curious to hear what your third person is, because that was almost my actual list. Imagine.
My third person is going to surprise you.
The next person on my list founded what is now a company valued over $9 million. She started this company when she was 16 years old. And she concentrated and took calculated risks and developed this company into a brand. She was listed by Forbes as one of the youngest billionaires that has ever done it. This is Kylie Jenner. A lot of people look past like the Kardashian family due to their public image, but Kylie actually is really, really inspirational when you look at her, her track record as a businesswoman. And she was at that forefront of the beauty industry and beauty influencers. She was kind of like right at that turning curve. So she definitely has earned her place, rightfully so, as a trendsetter in the industry. And she's a global businesswoman. For her to be like, 26 years old?
Wow, 26.
Yo, come on. Like, you gotta get, like,
she's been a millionaire like 3 times over.
Yo, 9 times over. 9 times over. She was a millionaire 9 times. Like, it's
crazy.
26. That alone, like, so for you to be so young and have such a global business mind and driving it ambitious, I know a lot of people like say, oh, well, she was given money and she was given this and that. Just because you're given resources doesn't mean you know how to use them and configure them to optimize your payoff. And at 16, like, imagine the types of things she could have been doing with her time. She started out with Kylie Lip Kits. Debatable whether or not that was a good idea. I personally don't think it was, but it was a start. She didn't sit there and wait. She started and she did something and she threw it out there. And she actually got a lot of backlash at 16, 17, 18 years old because of those lip kits. Rightfully so, Kylie. You definitely tried it. But she was a young entrepreneur. And
yeah,
when you start off as an entrepreneur, you make mistakes and look silly and you just run that risk of embarrassment in front of people. But she did all of that and she was able to spin that and build on that lesson and build on the things that she's learned. And now she has Kylie Cosmetics, which is incredible. I'm just very, dare I say, proud of her. But I think that's dope for you to be so young and to be able to drive such a global brand and doing it at 20, before you're even 25, before you're 24. Come on. That's amazing. So I put her down on the list as one of my influential women's. My influential women's. All right. Let me hear your last one, Shannon.
Okay.
Wait, let me guess first. Let me guess, because you already had.
You're not gonna guess. Nah, you're not gonna guess this one, because this one is kind of a curve. Those two were like definitely the women that were most in the forefront.
Is it Marsha P. Johnson?
No. Now this one is a little more personal. This one's a little more personal, but I'm hoping that maybe I can bring this person to the forefront for people who are like me and who are looking for themselves in the things that they love. So as a young artist and journalist and author and writer, writing and reading were so important to me. And I found such a love for reading at an early age, and I'm just kind of lucky that way. But as I'm reading and as I'm trying to figure out what I'm into, which is sci-fi, I'm like, okay, well, where are the people who look like me who are writing these sci-fi stories that I want to read? Where are these people? And so, you know, my mom was like, well, why don't you get into the library? So I got into the library and I found this woman who is really just the blueprint. And every Black author, fiction author, knows who this woman is. Let's get into Octavia Butler, everybody. If you do not know who Octavia Estelle Butler is, and let me tell you something. Octavia Estelle Butler is, she's a Cancer. She's right on the cusp, June 22nd, okay? So she's right there with me. And she was an American science fiction author and a multiple recipient of the Hugo and Nebula Awards. And in 1995, she became the first science fiction writer to receive a MacArthur Fellowship. And if you don't know what a MacArthur Fellowship is, it's basically like, it's the Genius Grant. They refer to it as the Genius Grant, and it's a prize awarded annually by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation to typically between 20 and 30 individuals working in any field who have shown extraordinary originality and dedication in their creative pursuits and a marked capacity for self-direction and have to be citizens of the United States. Okay. So she got this fellowship, and she's the first science fiction writer to ever receive this. And let's get into some of the things that you might know her for. So if you've ever heard of Kindred, Kindred is a sci-fi story that is set in the past and the present. And this story kind of speaks to slavery and just kind of puts a sci-fi spin on it. The Patternist series, I read all her books, by the way. The Parable series, and some scholars have really focused on her work because she chose to write from the point of view of marginalized characters and communities, and thus she expanded sci-fi to reflect the experiences and the expertise of the disenfranchised, okay? And this is so important because, like I said, as a child, I'm looking for myself in these stories and I'm not finding myself, right? And so the work that she did was so, so important. And a critic or a writer, Robert Crossley commended how her feminine aesthetic works to expose sexual, racial, cultural chauvinisms because it is enriched by a historical consciousness that shapes the depiction of enslavement, both in the real past and in imaginary pasts and futures. So this woman not only gave a perspective that nobody was giving, she also, in her own right, really push forward the feminist agenda by, like we talked about in literally our last episode, if y'all haven't checked out our last episode, in the sex segment, we talked about feminism as it pertains to sex and sexual liberation. She was a part of that movement as well, and just writing about it. And she's such an inspiration because as a writer, you're always told to write what you know, right? And a lot of times, what we know as Black people is totally different and a totally different perspective from what we were grown up to see, ingest, believe. And I think that anybody who can pave their own way in a white and a male dominated world, such as sci-fi, just gets all the accolades they deserve. Okay. And everybody else thought so too. So here, 2-3 cheers for Octavia Butler. And if you haven't gotten into any of her books, please get into some of these series because they're really good. Some of the one-offs are amazing too. We got Fledgling. She did that one just for fun. That's one of my favorite ones as well. So get into it and let's start a book club, y'all.
I'm gonna definitely add her to my reading list. That's what's up. Shout out to my girl, Octavia.
Yes.
All right. Last on my list, but certainly not least, is Beyoncé Knowles. Carter. All right. And I live in Texas now, so it's very heavy out here. when it comes
this
to
is it. Texas.
So I put her on the list because a lot of people know her as, you know, her this recording artist, this amazing world-class mold-breaking performer. But what a lot of people don't know is that she's quite the philanthropist. She has an organization called Be Good, which is is dedicated to economic equity within the Black community. And this organization has teamed up multiple times with the NAACP to provide small business grants for Black business owners. Be Good has donated over $2 million. When I say Be Good, this is her. Like, she has, through this organization, donated over $2 million back in 2021 to historically Black colleges and universities. And to date, the company still focuses on that economic equity by supporting other organizations and serving marginalized communities, as well as underserved communities, with educational resources like scholarships and great internships that lead to placement, as well as entrepreneurial support for business sustainability in the Black community.
That's beautiful.
That's just one focus of what Be Good does. I believe she has an education something going on in Africa as well. Like, this organization does a lot of things, and this is for sure something that she's very proud of, but she's also very humble about it. She's not trying to make the news and make press. Like, this is an organization that's doing these amazing things, and it's doing it because of the kindness of her heart. It has nothing to do with wanting to be recognized or wanting to have all of this stuff. And I just appreciate that within her being such a busy person and such a so focused on her craft and stuff, still finding time to be a philanthropist, to pass the baton along to other people, to also be their own philanthropists and their own entrepreneurs and business owners and stuff like that. So shout out to the queen. Not to mention, you know, her music, whether you love it or hate it, you can't deny that it triggers movements. What was the first album to like trigger them? Like, I don't know what to say. Like, it was before Lemonade.
Her self-titled album, Beyonce, the first one, was pretty fucking iconic.
Yeah. It gave that whole single.
Oh, sorry. Dangerously in Love. That's that one. Beyonce is the one with the pink.
Yeah.
That's the one that dropped with the visual album. Oh. Single Ladies is actually... Is it Single Ladies, the like deluxe version of B-Day? No,
I'm asking what album was the single on.
Single Ladies single?
Yeah. It was on B-Day?
The one after B-Day. What's the one after B-Day? We're going to have to... I Am Sasha Fierce. I feel like it's I Am Sasha Fierce. Probably. Yes. Because that was the two-sided album.
The video was definitely Sasha Fierce-esque.
Because it was black and white. Because that was the black and white era.
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah.
But I'm thinking more like... We had four and then we had Beyonce. But I'm thinking like... Obviously,
what's your favorite Beyonce album?
Lemonade went crazy. That was a movement.
Lemonade did go crazy.
A lot of people don't even... realized that the Lion King the Gift album,
actually that was probably my favorite.
That is
to
still
be honest
my
but
favorite.
Four
that's still my
four
favorite.
In the Lion King album, four and the Gift, which is the Lion King album.
The Gift
four is like the most underrated album
that she had dropped on
a year after the album, but still we waited on it.
Her song,
but four was my favorite.
Formation alone just unleashed a whole, like, her music
movement
unleashes
that was a movement.
Movements is what I'm like getting at. It doesn't matter whether you are a fan, whether you like it or not, you can't deny that she has such an impact on the hearts of so many people that they want to drive her art and aesthetic in their personal life as loudly as possible to fight back against injustices. That's a really beautiful thing. So shout out to her. Been a fan.
We need to do an episode where we do album analysis, because if you really kind of like break down her whole progression, every phase was a movement, and we can say exactly what it moved people to do.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful too. So one time for Beyonce, the queen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, thanks for that, Liz, Shannon. Definitely going to check out some of Octavia's books. Yeah, but let's go ahead and jump into the mental health session. You requested a very particular topic, and I delivered.
I did.
Okay, I delivered. So
get us inside the female head. Get us inside his brain.
Let's jump in.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
Okay, so for today's mental health session, we're going to be talking about psychosocial development. And in particular, we're going to be talking about female psychosexual development according to Sigmund Freud's Electra Complex. Now, in order for you to understand this conversation, we first have to understand the varying degrees of sexual attraction in humans. Sexual attraction, as we know it today as adults, is usually a reference of how it evolved through puberty. But prior to having the connection of arousal and hormones, there was different varying degrees of attraction, affectionate attraction, and romanticism that we started formulating as early as 4, 5, and 6 years old by watching people around us. And Freudian psychology is very centered in that particular type of evolution. And so the first and most prominent example of romanticism or romanticized relationships or partner or unity between people that we saw was that of our parents. And that is where our, I guess, journey starts a little bit when we start thinking about what type of person we want to be with, what type of partner we want to be with. Freud suggests that the Electra Complex defines a space of romantic bonding between a woman as a girl and her father. And that pretty much looks like a lot of like the entitlement of affection, the expectation of your dad be there. If you've ever heard of like daddy's girls, like thinking about the type of
I'm connection a daddy's girl.
And chemistry that is there. Within that particular complex also comes this sense of feminine competition. So for all of you daddy girls, you probably remember a period of time where y'all was probably beefing with your mom for you was mad that daddy was hugging other people, or he was mad that daddy was holding someone's hand and things like that. So through that process, we begin to learn at a very young age that our parents are not available romantically to us. And so what we do is, as we let that go and we grow and we just live the rest of our lives, but when puberty kicks back in, it has sealed off this concept of like anti-familiar or anti-family related attraction, but it remembers the satisfaction and the comfort that you did receive in that daddy's girl era. And so your lens of what type of person you want, and I guess what right now we're talking specifically about cis heteronormative attractor between opposite sexes, but whatever you are now attracted to is kind of intended to be like a fill-in for that energy that you was experiencing when you were younger. And this is where you get the notion that we marry our parents or we look for partners that remind us of our parents, because the ideal, with your father being like the first man, the ideal picture of a man, granted a healthy relationship, but sometimes not, but the idea picture of a man and a romanticized idea of what you look like in a relationship and what you would want comes from that particular complex when you were younger. And so when you look to find a partner, you will coincidentally find yourself more geared and attracted towards people who remind you of your father in certain ways. This is actually a type of psychology that's baked into American traditional values. If you think about the traditional ceremony of marriage between opposite sex, his cis hetero partners, you're going to find that the father is giving away the daughter to the husband. So that is kind of like a change of expectation, that the responsibility to be the provider and the protector of the woman is no longer on the father. And at that time, it is now transferred to the husband. So that is a gist of the Elektra complex. I thought this would be a really good concept, not only because it was by popular demand, but I thought it would be a really good concept to start to think about, like, how much of our inner child shows up in our adult intimate relationships and things like that. And I think that this is really prevalent for women, because the expectations over the course of, let's say you're 30. Within 30 years, 15 to 20 years ago, what was expected, how you were seen as a woman, has changed dramatically. And because of the patriarchy, women get the last say when it comes to how they're seen, because they don't have authority over that. And they don't have like a fallback of a rank underneath them that's like, okay, well, we still have like supervisory types of authority when it comes to how we see ourselves or how we see other people. So they lack that automatic social power to frame a picture inside of a lens. And so things change, and it has nothing to do with women. And then on top of that, you see there's so much impacting and reinforcement of how men push that marginalized and very small box of where women's are supposed to be. Like, you've heard stay in a woman's place, you've heard stay in a child's place, never heard stay in a man's place. So
never.
You never hear that. So that is that's kind of where I wanted to go with today. I wanted to, you know, toss it over to you and see how you felt about it, how you felt about connecting these concepts of romantic attraction and the Elektra complex into experiences as a woman today.
You know, I think it's interesting because, you know, this isn't the first time, you know, maybe in high school we're introduced to Freudian principles and things like that. And, you know, as a adolescent, you hear stuff like this and you're like, wait, what? I'm supposed to be attracted to my dad? Like, no. In my mind, I'm thinking physical attributes, which in reality, I'm physically into probably the opposite of what my dad looks like. But as I've gotten older, and it really recently, it really hasn't clicked for me that, and I love my daddy. My daddy has definitely been there physically. My mother and my father are still married. They've been married for like 48 years at this point. But I think emotionally, my dad has always been unavailable. So I seem in my adulthood to go for men who are physically available, but not emotionally available. And I think that it's taken me a long time to kind of realize that is kind of reminiscent of my father. And I think that my father is a baby boomer. My father is in his 70s right now. So in his day, men weren't emotionally available for their families. They were out working. You know, they were out doing everything but, and it just wasn't really customary for that to even be a thing. And even in my father's later age now, he's just now kind of forming this emotional bond with the children that he has left. And some of my siblings believe that it's kind of too late for that. For me, I don't think it's ever too late, but I have seen that effect on me in how I date and the men that I look for. And that's just something that's just become pretty much revealed to me recently. So I can really relate a lot to the things you talked about.
Yeah. A lot of people, well, I don't want to speak about a lot of people because this episode is about women. So there are...
Well, women are people.
Women are people, but all people ain't women. And we're talking about the ones that are women.
You're right about that. Okay? You're right about that.
We're talking about the ones that are women. So I'll reframe that and say that there are plenty of women who don't have the most healthy and nurturing relationship with their fathers, but find themselves in like patterns that they are kind of running into men in their adult life that had those same like skill deficits that their fathers had. And it's not intentional. Yes. I don't think that any woman is actively looking to put themselves in a situation where they are putting all of their time, energy, connection, commitment into a partner that is not emotionally available. But the problem in which is the basis around Freudian psychology and a lot of psychologies is that it's comfortable. And when you make...
it's familiar.
Yeah. When you make strange experiences normal to you, your ability to assess the danger in that type of situation is numb because it's to you not technically dangerous. You're not afraid of it because you know it. And it could also leave a marker in our minds that the things that you don't know, even if they're healthier, are scarier when it comes to dating.
Absolutely. And even down to just having the realization, and this has been a slow process. This is I'll be 35 this year. And this has probably been like a 15-year process. But even just leaving the house is just kind of one marker to the realization of, you know, my father and I's relationship. Because it's like leaving the house and moving somewhere that's extremely far, which is something he didn't want, by the way, because I'm from Atlanta, if you all don't know. Moving to the DMV area really kind of taught me that, like, okay, so even though me and my mom kind of have been beefing for all of this time, I don't really have an emotional connection with my father to be calling him, to be talking to him, to be texting him. You get what I'm saying? Like, that emotional deficit was there. It took me, I guess, a long time, the next 10 years, to figure out that I had also been kind of comfortable in that, searching for men in that way. And kind of the more I analyze it, the more they have a lot of his skill set deficits in a lot of ways. And the things that I love about him and the things that I've always admired and revered about him, I have not found in another person. So it's funny how that works that way, because the things that I want to find that he has and the attributes, I haven't been able to find those. And I think, like you said, it's not on purpose. So really interesting.
Yeah. Well, for this particular mental health session, I did leave some room for recommendations. I know that a lot of people listening to this is also going to feel the same way. And when you find yourself attracted to things that are not healthy for you, but you don't know how to run, come out of that like pattern, it can be like disheartening. It can feel hopeless, but fear not. I have some solutions for you. Y'all are getting a free mental health coaching session today.
Thank you. Okay. That's what we're here for.
$3.99.
I love freebies.
So when it comes to, after you come to that realization, obviously you're feeling like I'm doing something that does not work. It usually is the first step to it no longer working. Anytime that I work with a client and there are things that they're doing or not doing, when they ask me, is this right? Am I supposed to be doing? I ask them, does it work? Because whether or not it's right or wrong, if it works, then you're going to keep doing it. And you won't stop doing it until it no longer works. So realizing that it doesn't work is the first step. And then understanding, why doesn't it work? What is the goal that I'm trying to get out of this? And why am I not getting to that goal? And what you'll find is that maybe there are very particular feelings or experiences that you're looking to feel when you're with your partner. Write those things down. Describe them in full detail. And I mean, even if it's something as simple as, I want to feel embraced and protected. write 2 or 3 pages of what that is. If you have to repeat the same sentence over and over, write it down. Because what happens is that the language processing, when your brain is in that vulnerable space, is looking for new coding. And it's replacing the scripts that are already in your head as in regards to like pursuing what it is that you're looking for. So when you describe it and be super specific, you're putting that information back into your head and allowing that to plant roots of what you're looking for. Once you understand what you want, go to the next page, write down, what does that look like in a partner? If you're looking for a man, write down, what does that look like in a man? What type of history would this man maybe have had? What type of vulnerabilities does this man have? How does this man probably express themselves? Just think about it. And I tell people, you don't have to be a therapist to give yourself a therapeutic lens. You can have a therapeutic point of view. Just think about it. It don't have nothing to do with your degrees. It doesn't have to do with what school you go to. Sit with yourself and think about it. What are the qualities of this man? When this man is getting to know you, what is it that you can expect to see? When this man is feeling mistrusting, what is it that you expect to see? Write about this particular quality in this man. There's a lot of people that will say, write down your checklist of the things that you want in a man. I don't know that checklists are necessarily helpful, but when you can visualize and revisualize the qualities that you're looking to attract, you're going to manifest those things in a much healthier route. And it's another way for your body to gauge where the safety control is. Because let me simplify this example. Let's say I lost a sense of touch in my hand, right? And I have lacked any sense of touch in my hand, and I've lacked it for a very long time, to the point where I operate knowing that I don't have a sense of touch. I don't feel my hand when it's there. The problem in that is that if my hand is in danger, I'm not going to notice it, right? If I put my hand in some hot water, it's not going to feel hot to me.
Right.
So what I have to do is describe the heat to myself so that my brain starts to look out for the signals that the water is hot. I have to be able to know, okay, the properties of that hot water is when I see steam, if it sounds like it's boiling, maybe there's a certain burning smell that I have to it, and that's going to signal my brain like, wait a minute, you can't feel, but don't touch that shit. You see what I'm saying? So when we...
Good analogy.
Yeah, yes, when we come analogy. Through like experiences, especially in our childhood, we normalize them for the sake of our development. We have to still develop.
Right.
Sometimes there are experiences that are large enough to stunt our development, and we call those things trauma. But for developmental perspectives that we kind of hold and internalize, and especially if we don't realize it's wrong, right? When you are lacking thereof something, you don't realize what you're lacking.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you need to now teach yourself to look out for signs and signals that go along with a man or woman or person that has what you're looking for, as well as to look out for the signs and signals that don't have what you're looking for. That way, those yellow flags that should have been red flags will actually be red flags. So that's my...
Well, thank you for that.
That's my therapy. Free 99.
We love that. Come on. And I love that you're encouraging self-therapy. And I'm not knocking regular therapy, because obviously regular therapy is a necessity too. But I do so relate to being able to kind of therapize yourself and sit through something, talk through something, write something down. Journal prompts are really important that way. Because
you're an artist.
Right. You're an artist and it's important. Right. That's kind of what we do anyway. And so a lot of times artists use these type of things for catharsis as well. And it helps us not only release emotions that are associated with whatever we're going through, but it also kind of helps us move forward. So I appreciate that so much. Thank you for that, Rob. And I hope y'all are listening out there. Get a pen and paper. This is your pen and paper time. Anytime it's time for the mental health sessions, come get on. The pen and paper.
Come on.
Get the pen and paper and write your... I encourage you all to write your own journal prompts. A lot of times, I know just a really quick example, during the pandemic, I did 21 Days Abundance with Deepak Chopra. And one of the journal prompts was kind of getting into that mother trauma and that trauma, what's it called? The mother wound, getting into the mother wound. And just writing about my relationship with my mother was kind of the first catalyst to healing it, which is in a great place right now. We're able to talk to each other and relate to each other a little bit better. So I encourage you all to kind of, you know, take matters into your own hands. You don't have to wait. Some people are like, I don't have money for therapy or whatever that is. You can always be working on yourself. You can always be introspective and assessing your life, and because you have to try to move forward, right? And if we keep perpetuating these toxic patterns, then there's just no way we can get to that next level of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Ourselves, which is important. So thank you so much for that, Rob. I appreciate that. It was as good as I thought, so I'm glad you obliged me and got into that topic, because it was better than I can imagine. So good.
All right, well, what you got for us for the red light district? Because I need to know. A little birdie told me that you had something going on. You got a big talk for us.
Yes. And I think lately, you know, the red light district, sometimes we get super sexy, right? And super raunchy. And sometimes we really get into it. But lately, I've kind of been feeling the spiritual energy behind what makes us sexual beings, and in the balance of that, and just kind of getting to the root of it, right? The root. And today we're going to get into the divine feminine. I know a lot of people have been throwing these two words around. They've been throwing this phrase around, and
I started saying something like, all right now. I know. Right, I'm already to come
it's
on.
It's very
now.
Churchy. It's very churchy. But let's get into it. I want to be touched and feel it so much, because everybody needs some good loving. Yeah, if I need it in the morning or the middle of the night, I have to find the bed. So a lot of people, especially if you're kind of attuned to social media and what's going on online, a lot of people have been talking about the divine feminine. But aside from the divine feminine, there, like we kind of talked about earlier in this season, there's been like a masculine versus feminine energy wave. And I kind of wanted to hop on that and really dissect it and figure out what's what, because a lot of girls are like, yeah, I'm in my feminine energy. I'm living the soft life. I'm just creating art. I'm creating people. And men are like, we're working and we're, you know, so what does it really all mean? And does it even have anything to do with the divine feminine, is what I really wanted to know. So the first question that we're asking and answering is, what is the divine feminine? So the divine feminine, also known as the sacred feminine, is the spiritual concept that there exists a feminine counterpart to the patriarchal and masculine worship structures that have long dominated organized religions. The divine feminine extends well beyond one belief system, and instead can be used as a spiritual lens to balance our perspective. And this is from thegoodtrade.com. So I'm going to quote this from that article. It says, the existence of the divine feminine suggests that complementary energies exist within each being. So what does this mean, right? Does this mean that men or women are opposites? Not necessarily. That's kind of more like a very simple way to explain it. And I know a lot of times on the internet, we get a lot of different perspectives. Sometimes these perspectives are a little more simple. Sometimes they're more complex. So let's get into the complexities. Because gender binaries, right? We kind of know those now in 2024 as divisive tools. So gender binaries are really kind of like one of the tools that colonizers used, and colonial approaches to gender have routinely devalued the feminine in indigenous belief systems and matriarchal societies. So on the West, right, where we are now, which is not, we're a patriarchal society in the U.S., But many matriarchal societies are kind of looked down upon and frowned upon and seen as lesser. And when colonizers came over to the Americas, a lot of the indigenous people had their specific belief systems that were connected to feminine energy, the divine feminine, feminine deities, and they kind of were thrown to the side and really devalued. So when most people talk about the divine feminine in today's context, they're working to kind of redirect the perceptions of a gendered spiritual imbalance. Okay. What do I mean by this? We'll get into kind of that right after this, but just going back a little bit to some of these ancient polytheistic cultures like Greek culture, Romans, Africans, Egyptian cultures, those cultures had many gods, and the divine feminine was represented by many goddesses. And if you kind of fast forward to today, we have a couple of religions and belief systems that are still doing that, like Tantric Buddhism and Hinduism. And they both kind of focus specifically on female deities. But what is the spiritual femininity based on, right? So what does it have to do with? What are we talking about here? Are we talking about men versus women? No, we're not talking about gender either. Gender really kind of doesn't have to have anything to do with it. I think when we use gender to describe energies, it's so that we can understand. It's almost like it doesn't have to be that. It can be, if you think of the concept of yin and yang, right? Yin and yang they don't exist without each other. Right? They exist in balance and in harmony. Yin and yang are receptive and productive, introspective and extrospective, masculine and feminine, if you will. It's just kind of a descriptor, but it doesn't necessarily mean that women need to rest in their divine feminine and men need to rest in their divine masculine. That's really kind of not the direction that it really goes in. You would even know that when you look at the yin and yang symbol, most people can kind of picture this in their head. You'll see that it's not a straight line down the middle, right? Uh-huh. Both weave in and out of each other in harmony, and there are dots of each on either side. So you can also kind of make this comparison of the sun and the moon, or the left side and the right side of your brain, right? It's all about balance. So the feminine side of these energies and the energies that really kind of live in everybody, right? Because you want to have a balance within yourself. The feminine side is related to receiving or being hidden. And the masculine side is more closely related to being visible or producing. And in a society like the US, where we're obsessed with producing, this is like a hustle mentality type place, right? Right off the bat. And a lot of people who don't live in the US, who maybe come and observe Americans, they're like, you guys just don't know how to sit down. You're always doing too much. We're the only people who like take coffee to go. People like Europeans think it's super weird that we carry our coffee around and don't enjoy it, like sitting in a cafe. That's just like one of the examples. We're always doing a lot. So yeah, our feminine sides are related to receiving and being hidden, and the masculine side is more closely related to being visible or producing. And in the US, because we're obsessed with producing and hustling and just being on the move and working, and we got workaholics here, that's really kind of like only a thing in America. Sometimes it seems like the receiving end is like the lesser of the two, right? It kind of has a negative connotation because in the US, we put so much emphasis on the masculine side, of the producing side, of the hustling side. And you even see now in today's society, I think a lot of women are like now pulling back and saying, I need to get into my soft life, because there's also no balance in our lives. And I'm not going to say there, because I am a single woman who is an entrepreneur and I am providing for myself. We get really, really caught up in this production, right? But the whole hustle culture can be really, really toxic, and it's important for us to create that balance for ourselves. Okay. So how do we embrace our divine feminine energy, right? How do we do that? How does a person, not a woman, not a man, how does a person embrace our divine feminine energy? Well, embracing the divine feminine really means examining ourselves honestly and holistically to find the balance that works for us, right? That means that we have to take moments, and moments can be any length of time. As we know, we talked about earlier in this season, we talked about burnout. So a moment can be a year. A moment can be a couple of years, depending on what your struggle is and what your life is like. It can be any length of time, but we need to take a moment where we step back from producing to restore, to bring life, and to foster growth, right? Because we're obsessed with doing, right? But sometimes we need to be so that we can grow. And I made a thread post recently, and I got a lot of like positive comments on it. But sometimes as an artist, stepping back into the artist's perspective, sometimes you have such an artist block because you've just been doing for so long, and you have to step back in life and grow and give yourself time to grow and change. And you've been doing all these things that are catalysts for change, but you're not taking the time to stop and allow yourself to catch up. Right? Allow your psyche and your emotions, your emotional side, to catch up. And so remembering that neither one of these energies, masculine and feminine, exist singularly is super important.
Very important.
They don't exist without each other. Each individual should move as though both energies are within them. And if you believe this, then they are. And they're constantly seeking harmony. They're constantly in flux. So sometimes you might be like hella in your masculine bag, right? And you might be doing, and you might be producing. And that's the vibe for the moment, right? But you have to create balance for yourself in that moment. And conversely, you might be in a moment where you're kind of like chilling and you're enjoying the soft life, and you are just kind of sitting back and just observing life as an observer. That's fine too. But creating that balance in your world is really, really important. So if there are some sharper pieces of yourself that need to be softened, then you can recognize that and give that balance to yourself. Conversely, if there are fragile parts of yourself or fragile parts of your heart, as we talk about dating in 2024, then it's important for us to find a way to stabilize and strengthen those parts of ourselves. So in conclusion, right, the divine feminine is super beautiful, but it does not exist outside of the divine masculine, or whatever you want to describe these energies as. Okay. It's important for us to maintain that balance. And so men have to have a feminine side as well. They have to have a side that, you know, promotes nurturing and promotes growth. So yeah, that's kind of what I have to say about the divine feminine. And I know personally that balance has been something that I've constantly toggled with. It's a constant, I wouldn't say struggle, but it's constantly in flux. And it's important for us to realize where we are in our world at the time so that we can create that balance and find that balance for ourselves. And that balance might also be in a partner, in a friendship, in a relationship where you might not be able to provide it for yourself, but you might be getting that on the other end from somebody else. And that's a whole nother story. But that's where I'm going to leave it. That is our red light district for today. I want to know what your thoughts on that are, Rob.
That was my favorite red light district segment.
Not your favorite.
That was my favorite, yeah.
You on your beard hard right now. You're on your thinker.
This is
you're
my thinking. This is my thinking.
This is your thinking. He's playing with his beard right now.
I loved the message of the importance of incorporating both feminine and masculine elements coexisting within yourself, because they do coexist around us. To clarify for anyone that needs clarification, when you're talking about producing being connected to the masculine, it's not that the feminine cannot produce. It's that produces through creation. The masculine manipulates the creation for productivity. And so what you were saying about this system of capitalism and production and essentially manipulating time to translate into money, that is of the divine masculine for the sake of productivity. Whereas the divine feminine sits in the moment and creates, searches for inspiration to create.
This is something that we've actually talked about prior, and I didn't want to get too much into it, but that's also why it's called the sacred feminine, because the sacral center of the creative energy is said to be connected to a woman's womb, right?
Right.
So when we get a little bit deeper into that, yes, we know that our creative center is seen as sacred, and it's right, and it's described as a womb, but it's not an actual womb. It's more like,
exactly,
right? It's not a physical womb. It's more of a proverbial womb. Yeah. It's more of a figurative womb, if you will. But we all have that same creative center too, which I think is so amazing, right? Because it applies, both apply to everybody. And that's why it's important for us to have both inside of us.
Exactly. So that we complement both parts of ourselves and we live within ourselves in harmony, the way that the divine masculine and divine feminine exists in harmony.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Shannon. All right.
We can get a little bit deeper, because this is something that I've actually just done a deep dive in, but I always try to keep it short for you all, just because I don't want to put too much information on you at the same time. But we've kind of been exploring this topic like in bits and pieces for the last two seasons. So I'm excited to expand upon this in the future, because it's something that I honestly had no idea about until maybe the last couple of years of my life, but it's never too late. So, yeah.
Got you. Sure. Well, thank you so much for that.
And thank you for your input.
Loved it. For those of you who are listening, remember to hit us up on Instagram @ The Bridge Millennials. You heard that? What was that at the S? That was an S. Okay.
Yes.
Check us out on Instagram. Drop a comment and let us know what you thought about the episode. Share it with the people that you know. Send us a DM if you are looking to give us some feedback personally, a voice note, or even just saying what's up. We accept those too. And of course, make sure that you turn those notifications on so that you get all of our new upcoming episodes and whatnot. And Shannon, let them know where they can find you on the webs, the interwebs.
You can find me on social media. Instagram is my most frequented social media. You can find me at my main page @ I am Shannon Ashlea, on my fashion page @ Eclectric Pop. He already told you where you can find The Bridge Millennials @ The Bridge Millennials on Instagram as well. And and my website. You can also book me, okay?
Booker.
Because baby creates, she creates, okay? And she does. We do it all. And you can find that @ www.shannonashlea.com.
All right, now. And you can check out my Instagram @ Robert St. Michael, spell the whole thing out, RobertSaintMichael, to keep up with the things that I do. I do a lot of public health related stuff. I obviously do mental health coaching and things like that. If you're interested in a session, go head on to robertstmichael.com, which is actually due for a revamp. So that'll be taking place next week. But the website's still there and the website's still valid. So you can go ahead and book a free consultation. And if you are interested in hearing more mental health topics, you can head over to the Group Sessions podcast, where I do like a group style mental health coaching session, very similar to what you got like back in the day with the support groups. And we just have these conversations, just kind of like exploring just our own mental health and different concepts that impact our health. So you can check that out. And I think that's all we got for you. I appreciate everybody for tapping in, all the homies at home showing y'all mad love. And is it my turn to leave the quote?
I think it's my turn.
Okay. All right. I think. Take us out with some food for thought.
Some food for thought. The pressure. I would definitely. let's get into that. I would say the food for thought today is that pressure makes diamonds. And if you're not feeling pressure, then just know that you're going to need a little bit more to churn out something amazing. And I can say in my life, that's definitely held true. So remember that.
Okay. I was expecting something. And I'll see y'all next time. Free the nipple, but I respect it.
But you know what? You can't choose the message. The message chooses you. And I gave you two gems. Come on, church. You two gems
that's
today.
That was what we was looking for. That's what it was.
I gave you two gems today.
You can't choose the message. The message chooses you.
The message chooses you, baby. It reaches you. And on that note.
Peace out.
That is our show. We'll see y'all next time.